Welcome to Cult Talk with Aaron Martin, a conversation, not an investigation. Cult Talk is a podcast that explores the realities of cult life, how they operate, who joins them, why people stay, and how some members eventually find their way out. Season one of Cult Talk will focus on a little-known cult called the COBU, which stands for the Church of Bible Understanding, led by Stuart Trail. In this episode, I talk to Dave Pattison, who has just published a graphic novel called The Cult, A True Story, which chronicles his time in COBU. He talks to me about what led him into COBU, how he got out, and of course, the similarities that we've heard from so many other ex-cult members about the questioning he did of himself while in the group and, of course, after the group. He also talks about how the idea for his graphic novel, The Cult, came about and what he hopes to do with it. He has some great suggestions for people who are trying to get out of an oppressive group. And in this two-part interview, he really goes deep on how Stuart manipulated him and others and how he's made peace with that today. Here's part two of my interview with author and ex-COBU member Dave Pattison. What was the catalyst for you then? Were you caught up in a public humiliation? Did you just finally see him for what he was? Was it something else?
No, it took me a long time to see him for what he was. What happened is that they didn't like for us to go visit our families.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad had always stuck with me and always tried to, he even came to a big meeting and it was around Christmas time. And I also had great respect for my grandparents and I really wanted to visit my grandparents. And so I went down to visit them. And while there, I tried to save my niece, and my sister became enraged with me.
Oh, no.
She certainly didn't want her daughter going into a cult with me.
You can't spread that throughout the family, yeah.
Yeah. But her husband, my brother-in-law, was very much into Buddhism. And so we got to talking, and I was talking to him about Jesus and Christianity, and he started talking to me about Buddhism. And somehow, you know, the way I used to be kind of came back. I became more open and more willing to listen to other viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
And the more he talked about Buddhism, I started nodding my head and said, yeah, well, that makes sense. And yeah, you can be a Christian and a Buddhist, you know, because Buddhism is a practice. And so, you know, after talking to him, I couldn't argue with him and it made too much sense to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went back to the cult, I said, you know, we should really look into Buddhism. And oh, my God.
How'd that go over?
Oh, my God. Like a Led Zeppelin. I mean,
we should really look into Buddhism. I could just imagine it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they pulled out their Bibles like they were guns, like they were defending themselves. And they turned straight to Jeremiah, you know, about false, you know, you shall not worship false idols.
Yeah,
and Baal and all of that. And just hammering me with this stuff, you know. And suddenly I became a pariah. Everyone was afraid to talk to me. No one talked to me, you know.
Yeah.
On Sundays, when they would go to their meetings, they didn't go to church. They went to meetings. And when they went to one of their meetings, they would just leave me. You know, they wouldn't even ask me to come. They didn't want me around.
So no one was asking you to go, but they were just icing you out.
They were icing me out, isolating me. Mm-hmm. And I still believed that they were the church and that, you know, they were the church I was born into, you know, spiritually, and whether, you know, I got along with them or not, you know, I had to work with them. And so I wanted to somehow, bring together the Buddhism and the Christianity, you know, and I was really naive at the time because of my situation, thinking that I could do that.
And were you about 20 years old at this point?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was about 20. But the Buddhism really, it made sense to me, and it actually gave me peace that I didn't have before from being in the group. Because, you know, initially I had peace from being with the brothers and sisters, but after being exposed to Stuart for so long, that peace was gone.
Right.
It was all legalism and a competition to see who was the more zealous, which it just, you know, made me miserable. Stuart had his henchman, his inner circle, and that was Jimmy. He sent Jimmy down to deal with me, and Jimmy had come down, and Jimmy wouldn't talk to me. He would just stare at me and call me a ghost. And
what was that all about?
Apparently, I was a ghost because I had backslidden or something, which he had assumed that I had backslidden, but I was a ghost.
Okay. And
So I would go to the bathroom, or like I remember once getting up at night, going to the bathroom, Jimmy's on the couch, and me looking at Jimmy, Jimmy looking at me, me shrugging my shoulders, like, you know, what you looking at? It was one of those things where, you know, you have to say something. Mm-hmm. And then he's just launches into how defiant I am and how proud I am. And like, did you see that rebellion in him? Like, I have this spirit of rebellion all of a sudden. And at that point, I still didn't want to leave. I still wanted to make it work.
While you were there, did you have any relationships where you felt like you could tell anyone your doubts, or were you keeping most of that to yourself?
The funny thing is that something in me didn't doubt the church.
Okay.
Somehow I felt that the church was the right church. And my problem was I really didn't question it. What I did question was how I could marry Buddhism and Christianity and still live in the cult.
Speaking of the word marry, did you have any thoughts of wanting to have a relationship with a woman or with, you know, get married yourself at some point? I mean, you were a young man. Was that all being frowned upon at this point? After my parents left in 78, I believe, they really kind of started cracking down on it.
Yeah, there's a while there. I got moved around from house to house. In one house, there was a married couple, but there was the only married couple I knew of in the church. And it was David, and he had a son, and he had a wife. I can't remember her name. And I remember Jimmy being with us there. I remember driving around with Jimmy and David's wife and just overhearing Jimmy just digging into their marriage and criticizing it, and actually hearing his wife talk about how her husband was not faithful or lukewarm or something. And it kind of sickened me.
And did you get the sense that you yourself were not allowed to have relationships?
Nobody had relationships except for that couple. And, you know, there was no dating or anything. Now, there were definitely sisters there that I was attracted to. And
but you knew you couldn't act on it per Stuart's, not his even. He didn't really even directly tell people, but
it's something that was never spoken, but it was something you just didn't do.
Yeah.
And I didn't really think too much about it. I had, you know, I had fantasies, but they were just that. They were just fantasies that, you know, I could, me and this sister could get together one day and
run away together.
or start a fellowship somewhere, you know.
Right, right.
And
was it Jimmy then who finally had the final confrontation with you, or what was the leaving? How did that happen?
Yeah, it was Jimmy. Okay. I just couldn't, after that, I couldn't stay. And I walked away. Yeah, it was just one Sunday morning. I got up, I packed my guitar and my bag. And oh, it's funny because I'd brought a bunch of books that I had at home that were like on Taoism and different religions. And so they would stare. I even brought a record album of Brian Eno music that was, they thought was just sacrilegious, which it wasn't. So anyway, I grabbed most of my stuff. I couldn't carry everything and left. What I was leaving though, is I lived in the basement of this house and I was sleeping on a concrete floor in the wintertime with just a thin blanket. And I may have had a pillow. I don't know. I think I did have a pillow and that was it. And when I came back from my trip to my grandparents, I'd brought a bunch of stuff with me because I was going to make some changes. I figured, you know, and of course that would not be tolerated. So,
right.
Yeah.
So where did you go? Because this is always fascinating to me and also heartbreaking that some people don't leave or can't figure out a way to leave because their families have rejected them or they've been estranged from their friends for so long. But did you still have enough connection to your family that you felt like you could leave?
Yeah, I was very fortunate in that my dad has always stood by my side. And
that's so huge.
So I went home and he was there and he gave me a big hug and he let me stay with him.
Did you tell him what had happened? Did you open up to him or did he want to know?
No, I didn't open up about the cult for years. I struggled with it for years, but I didn't really open up. The most I would say is, yeah, I was in a cult. So what?
Right. Yeah. Right. So when you say you struggled, I think this is helpful for other people to hear who might be struggling. What kinds of things were a struggle for you?
Well, when I left the cult, I thought that I was turning my back on Jesus.
Right.
I thought I was being a Judas.
Because that's what they tell you.
Yeah. They love to tell you that, you know, if you were sinning, whether it was thinking dirty thoughts or whatever minor little infraction you did, you were driving a nail into Jesus's, into Jesus. You know,
and this is how they kept people. In your overview for your book, you wrote, you know, this is a cult that didn't chain its devotees to their bunks or stalk them after they left. But that seems like the main way they kept people in there was through shame, through spiritual shame.
Yeah, spiritual shame. Yeah. And they, even though I had physically left, I was still in the cult for, I guess, 5 or 6 years. I was just round and round about it, vacillating between going back and staying out, you know.
It's very common for people to go back. I mean, did you have any other ex-members to talk to?
Oh, no, no.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah. I left with the impression that all the ex-members were on a highway to hell. And, you know, and I wasn't far behind them. I had no contact with any ex-members. Yeah.
I think the fact that my parents left with such a pretty large group at the time of other people truly helped them all not go back, you know, and it's just it's heartbreaking when you have to leave on your own and you don't have a network of people to talk to and process that experience with and lift each other up, you know, and remind each other you're not evil. It's OK. You know, we did the right thing. So I'm sorry that you didn't have anyone.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like a car that fishtails when it goes into a skid. I'd go into either I would be this evil sinner who was just into pursuing whatever his body, whatever his human nature wanted and not caring. And then I would veer back to being really strict, legalistic on myself. And, you know, as far as being a Christian, I wouldn't go a mile over the speed limit. You know? So, you know, I was kind of like rubber banding between one extreme and the other.
And did you eventually find the middle path? Speaking of
Yeah,
Buddhism.
I think I did. I think I did. Yeah. But it took a long time.
And how did you process this enough to eventually write a book? I mean, this because writing a book is really a process.
Yeah, it is. it took me years, actually. I had a lot of growing up to do. I went back to college. Well, I don't know if I was in college. No, yeah, I went to college for the first time. And it was a Baptist college. So I figured, okay, a good religious education at this Baptist college. And come to find out, it was like one of the most liberal Baptist colleges in the South. Our Old Testament teacher was a out-and-out atheist. I'm proud of it.
Maybe that was a good thing.
Oh, yeah, it was a good thing because I explored atheism. And actually, it was very liberating for me because at the time, I couldn't separate the cult from Christianity.
Right.
To me, they were synonymous. If I was going to be a Christian, I may as well just be in the cult, is right. The way I was thinking. But if there's no God, I mean, you know, it's like the John Lennon song, if it's only sky above us, you're free, you know, you're free to pursue your own path, you know.
Right.
So I did that for a while. And it led me to be very open-minded about other religions and to get a new perspective on Christianity.
That's great.
That I have before. So, yeah, my perspective now is much different from the fundamentalist Stuart. Well, from the color code perspective of Stuart.
Right. It's really Stuart wasn't really, you know, teaching Christianity or any religion. He was teaching his own brand of whatever. He could have done that. He could have stewardified any religion he touched. You know, it just happened to be Christianity that he turned into his own cultish mission of fear and shame.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very intelligent. He's very good at manipulating whatever. And Christianity was a useful tool for him to use.
When you decided to create this graphic novel, was it because you had created other graphic novels? I mean, what's your body of work before this? Or was this the first thing?
Well, this is the first one that I've published.
Okay.
But I had written a whole body of graphic novels. I wrote one that was dedicated to my dad. I wrote one about the farm I grew up on, my grandparents. I wrote one about a young kid, a young boy, Johnny Boy. It's a fantasy story about a precocious young kid who travels to the sun and has all these adventures, you know. So
I should look that one up for my daughter. She's asking, just by the way, we're doing this interview just before Christmas, and she's asking for graphic novels and stuffed animals this year. She loves graphic novels.
Okay, well, I haven't published the Johnny Boy series.
Okay. I don't think she's ready for the cult yet. I could let her look at the pictures, maybe. But if you publish the Johnny Boy one, let me know.
I'm very fond of the Johnny Boy stuff, so it may come out one day soon.
So what made you decide to do the cult, though? I mean, was it just something burning in you that you thought, I got to tell this story?
No. Just somebody... I was trying to pitch a book. Just finished a novel last year, and I'd spent like 3 years on this novel and critiquing it and workshopping it and making it perfect. And I took it to somebody, and he looked at it, and he didn't really say anything about it. But in our conversation, we were talking, and I'd mentioned that I was in a cult once, and we started talking about that. And he told me, he said, "That's the book you need to write."
Yeah.
And that's what inspired me. I mean, he kind of pushed me to write that one. And I didn't really have any strong feelings one way or the other before I started it. But as I got into it, I found all of these feelings coming up, surfacing. As I researched and learned more and more about Stuart, it just, you know, woke up. It was very healing for me to do this.
That's really wonderful. I feel like doing this podcast has been healing for me, and I wasn't even in it as an adult, you know, but just, I was as a child. And even though my memories are so vague, I grew up with the after effects. And so I feel like just hearing from other people has been really healing for me. And I think my parents too, you know, we'll see as it goes on. But I think just talking about it was an experience, and it feels unique, and it is unique. But then again, it's not when you talk to other people, because everyone had these same feelings. Like you're saying, you leave and you feel like a Judas. You feel like you can't separate Christianity or any belief system from what Stuart said. You can't reconcile the fact that Stuart is this completely different person than you thought at the beginning. It's, you know, it's a lot of similar feelings that I'm hearing come up, which is heartening and devastating at the same time.
Yeah. And the hard part, too, is I have a hard time reconciling how I could have fallen into that.
That's another part of it, right?
Especially knowing my first impression when I first met Larry was, this is a cult.
This is a cult, right? It's like your gut knew, I think you explain it. You kind of form a relationship with these people who are very nice. You're at a vulnerable time in your life. You know, there's just a series of unfortunate events can come together.
Yeah.
So in your graphic novel, do you go through your personal story? Do you include anyone else's stories? Do you include bigger themes? Tell people a little bit about it if they want to buy the book. What can they expect?
It's my personal experience in the cult, and everything from my sexual experience to my family trying to keep me out of the cult, to the control that Stuart gradually gained over me through the other members. All of those, I think I've tried to picture in detail through various incidents throughout the novel.
And do you chronicle any of the Haiti stuff, because you do mention that in your overview, or any parts of Stuart's life later on?
Yeah, the Haiti, I never went to Haiti, but it was used to enlist other people and it was used as a guilt thing. So that we were working to help the children in Haiti. And so we needed to work hard. We needed to make more money. We need to be thankful to be giving the money to help the children in Haiti.
Right. Another manipulation tool.
Yeah, another manipulation tool from Stuart. And that's how Haiti worked into the whole scene for me.
Did you research any of Stuart's sexual proclivities with any of the other women? I mean, does that come into play at all? Or did that, is that ever something you've discussed with other people? Because that really seems to be something not a lot of people talk about, but that I read over and over again.
Yeah, when I first saw Gail at a big meeting, and my first impression was, wow, this guy's got a girl that's half his age wearing these, what do they call that? Those outfits, the skin tight, almost like spandex, but it's not spandex.
Oh, okay.
Really? And she's in high heels. I mean, totally not what, none of the sisters look like Gail, you know, none of them flaunted their bodies like Gail did, you know, right. And I see Stuart would hug Gail, you know, and stuff, but it seemed like a, you know, stiff, like it wasn't shared, but that was just my initial perception. But yeah, I was like, wow, you know, this guy must be really faithful or something. You know, he's so bold about it.
Now, did you hear any rumors about him back in those days, or was that really later on?
I never heard any rumors about him at all. It was later on after researching it that I learned that he had that secret staircase where he could get down into the girls' dormitories, and he would walk into their rooms. And I learned some of this through your podcast.
Right.
None of this I knew at the time. No, I just thought that he just had a really hot wife.
Right. And his second wife, the first one, Shirley, he already got rid of.
Well, the story I got about Shirley was that Shirley was stepping out on him.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And that he was doing everything in his power to try to save their marriage and to save his children. And so, you know, I got the Stuart spin on all of that.
Yeah, of course. But isn't it interesting when you do a little research later, all of the things that come to light that are almost the opposite of exactly what you heard?
Yeah, I just want to go back and slap myself for not even questioning any of it.
It's, you know, it's when you're young, and it's, I think it's sometimes hard to see something that's so absurd too, because, you know, it's almost, have you ever heard the line where the bigger the lie, the harder it is to notice, or something like that? Because when everything around you is upside down, it just seems like that's the way it is. You know, it's not just one little thing you're picking apart. It would be your whole world that is, you know, you have to walk away from, and which you did eventually. But that's hard. That's hard to reconcile.
Yeah. And we were, at the time, the church was pretty big. We were about like 1,000, 2,000 people that were all upside down and not noticing it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And you think, well, am I the crazy one? You know, and then Stuart makes you feel that way if you want to leave, or if you don't believe in exactly what he's spewing. Yeah. They try to make you feel like the crazy one. So that's very difficult.
It's like, yeah. It's kind of, if I were to go out and tell people the world is flat, you know.
Right. Right. Exactly. So what would you say in closing, what would you say to anyone who is struggling in a similar situation? And it could be a religious group. It could just, there are so many cult-like organizations that, you know, you might not even classify as a cult, but where people are starting to feel oppressed or taken advantage of, or like they want to get out. You know, what are some words of wisdom or advice based on what happened to you?
Well, I'll use that question as an opportunity to plug my next book.
Oh, great.
After the Cult.
Oh, nice. Is it going to be a graphic novel as well?
Yeah, it's going to be in the same style as the first one.
Okay.
And it chronicles the real struggle I had mentally leaving the cult, and the people that helped me, that counseled me. And I went through I had my Old Testament teacher help me. He was the atheist. A roommate who was a pastor helped me. I was in a monastery for a while, and the brothers and sisters, well, no, the brothers in the monastery were a huge help for me, just letting me be myself and get to know myself and have my own relationship with God. So it was a long, arduous path, but it was very well worth it. It was very well worth the struggle.
Yeah.
And I'm happy where I'm at now in my life, and I have all of those people to thank.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that. And I look forward to your next book.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm excited about it.
We'll pause here for now, but join us for the continuing story on the next episode of Cult Talk. Also, join the listener conversation over on the Cult Talk with Aaron Martin Facebook page. Follow at Cult Talk on Twitter and Instagram, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast from any platform and leave us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. Cult Talk is written and hosted by me, Aaron Martin, and produced by Dan McInerney. See the show notes attached to this episode for all links to resources and social media associated with Cult Talk.